You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This is now our fourth campaign about the waterfront. We helped encourage the government to take up the idea of having the America's Cup bases on the land rather than what the council wanted to do, which was to fill in the harbour with 30,000 square metres of concrete. So we were really successful in that issue. The earlier this year, there was a protest down on Queen's Wharf that we organised to counter the council's plan to add a 90-metre extension to Queen's Wharf for the larger cruise ships that are now starting to come in. Right from the very beginning of our organisation, Stop Stealing Our Harbour, it became very clear that the port will just keep on filling in the harbour ad nauseum until there's probably nothing left, to be totally honest. So it occurred to us that it's probably not the best place for a port. 100 years ago, it was a perfect place for a port, and the city grew around the port. But the international trend is that cities move their ports. There's no more space for the port to grow, and the city wants to go into that space where the port is. We all know what happened in Sydney 50 years ago. That's half a decade ago. Sydney moved their port, transformed their waterfront into one of the greatest sort of iconic spaces we have in the world. Now, that's what we're proposing. We're proposing that the port should move so that land accounts for 20% of the CBD. It will be far better used as part of the city.
A lot of people are, I believe, content with the way things are, don't see Auckland having a reason for a waterfront, and wouldn't really mind if things just stayed the same. What do you say to them, convince them that a waterfront is something that we would want?
You only have to look at the evidence. Again, I'll just go back to Sydney. No one would advocate put the port back into Circular Quay, where it used to be, where the Opera House is. Go to London. The Port of London used to be all the way up the Thames. London has removed that, and now there's great public spaces, commercial spaces, residential spaces, all up and down the Thames. International trend of the great waterfront cities is to move their ports. The waterfront land is a strategic asset that belongs to the people of Auckland. The 77 hectares that the port now occupies down on our waterfront is a major strategic asset. When you have an asset like that, asset management is a process of always continually evaluating whether you're getting the right amount of value from that asset. To work out if it's still the best use for that land, you have to evaluate or compare it with other uses. And again, if we go back to those examples of those cities that I just mentioned, the community has not only benefited substantially more for communal use, social use, the environment is enhanced, but not only that, just as importantly, the economic argument for removing the port and having a combination of uses down on the waterfront completely outweighs the value that the port brings to the city. The port virtually makes no money. It returns a dividend of between roughly $9 million to roughly $15 million, depending on the year. It's a pathetic return on an asset that is worth $6 billion.
Well, the main estimate you're putting is value. It seems to be a function of how much capital the port can make. And right now you're saying it provides in dividends is abysmal compared to it being worth $6 billion, so at the moment it's not a good return on investment. But a lot of people's jobs and skilled work are through the port, and the port provides a lot of industry throughout that wider social factor. So do you feel like you're accounting for that in this measurement?
Do you mind if I ask your estimate be who actually work in the port?
People together with it? I would say definitely more than 1,000 people altogether.
Right. So the port itself, behind the Red Gate, this is a figure from a few years ago, so it may have gone up or down. It has 419 FTEs. Obviously, around that, there's subcontractors, a whole range of employment opportunities. for people who aren't directly employed by the port. I'm not sure what that figure is. From economics, you don't not change something because there are some employment there. So what are you comparing it to? Okay, let's take Wynyard Quarter. Now, when I was a child, I used to drive through there every day to get to school. And it was, from memory, the bulk end of the bulk cargo department of the port. Things like logs, pretty rumpty-do end of the port. The amount of people that that would have employed in that space would have been relatively small. Again, these are old figures, probably from about 2 or 3 years ago when I looked at the projections are that Wynyard Quarter, once it's fully developed, will have 20,000 working down there for a space that's roughly half the size of the current port's footprint. So, and then I think at the, you know, again, when I looked at it, which was about 2 or 3 years ago, I think at the time there was about 5,000 people working there. I don't quote me on those figures because I'm just pulling them out of my memory. But compared to the number of people who work at the port, it's actually a very, very large number. So the disparity between the opportunity for that space, for the footprint of the current port, the amount of people that will work there once it's freed up, plus the amenity value. If you put, you know, economists can actually put dollar values on these, assign dollar values to these things, and it far outweighs the current scenario that exists on that waterfront land. So I think that another answer to your question is all of us are blinded by the status quo bias. Do you know what the status quo bias means?
Yes, I do know what status quo bias is.
Yeah. So basically, when things are there, it's very hard to imagine something else being there. Now, when you have a massive piece of infrastructure, it is massive. As I said, it's 20% of the central business district area, which is a substantial amount of land, 77 hectares. It's, I think it's 1.5, again, this is from memory, 1.5 kilometres of waterfront. When such a big entity is there, it is very, very hard to see anything other than that. The reality is I actually love ports. I love industrial landscapes. I love containers and cranes and big ships. And I come from a sailing family. I've sailed, you know, all my life. My first memories are of being in a little dinghy and my father built his own boat and all that sort of thing. So I've sailed up and down that harbour all my life. I always quite liked the port. But being involved in this campaign, it just became sort of very clear that it was actually a very, very poor use of a very prime bit of real estate. So I myself am totally guilty. Until I started working on port issues and sort of became a lot more informed about what's happening down there, I too thought, well, you know, never concerned me. Sometimes you'd hear something about the problematic red fence, but it never worried me. But the difference between me now and me 5 years ago is I actually know quite a lot about the economics, the opportunities that we have, the opportunities that moving the port would give to other regions, the problems that the port has both on the seaside and on the land side. So now I can see sort of these other options which would be a much better use long term.
For another question, currently with the port, how well do you know the sort of environmental and ecological impact it has on the marine wildlife?
The interesting thing is the port has just always had a mandate just to literally do what it wants without any very little notification or consent to the community. So obviously we've narrowed the harbour by half. So any more narrowing is going to make the situation less helpful for the marine life. For example, dolphins and orcas. They do swim up the harbour on occasion. Now, the more narrow the harbour is, the more likely one of those animals is going to be hit by a motorboat, by a ferry, a ship, and by recreational users. So that's an issue. I know the port has had issues with whales being hit, and they've apparently had to slow the speed of ships coming into the outer Gulf to mitigate that problem.
But what is Waterfront 2029's vision? Say if we successfully move the port to Whangarei, what would you guys propose to do with that?
The answer is what we see all around the world in all the great waterfront cities. And again, you know, you just have to pop down to Wellington and see what they've done down their waterfront. What's really interesting about how Auckland has developed over the last 10 or so years, the amount of buildings that have been built south of Shortland Street, in other words, sort of from you know, basically from the end of, from Shortland Street up towards Civic and beyond, is very, very small. The amount of buildings that have been built north of Shortland Street, i.e. closer to the water, is very, very large. What does that tell you about not only the commercial trend, but also what people want? People build buildings in places where people want to go and want to be. So we've already got the answer. It's called Wynyard Quarter. It's called Sydney. It's called London. It's called New York. Whangarei and Northland will have a port and have a port that has the capacity to grow. Northland will finally have a real decent connection in two modes to the Auckland economy, which is really substantial. I think the for me and for a lot of people I talk to, the fact that we could open up the opportunity for the people of Northland, I think is a great thing. Northland is if you've driven through up to Cape Reinga, there's not that much going on there. Most tourists, they arrive in Auckland and they go south. I can't remember what the percentage is, but it's a very small proportion that go north. I mean, again, moving the port will have regional benefit. And also it will create more resilience to the freight network.
Just as a final question, Michael, I believe in the news article I read by RNZ, somebody did say it would be a once-in-a-generation opportunity for us to move the port. Say we aren't successful, or you guys aren't successful in moving the port, what sort of future do you envision in Auckland that the port remains?
We'll all benefit by the port going, because the city will be able to grow where it needs to grow towards the waterfront. Much greater vibrancy for the city. Aesthetically, it'll be a nice place to be. Tourists, it'll be a magnet for tourists, because tourists will love it. Essentially, what it will do, it'll set Auckland on fire. Keeping the port there is getting a bucket of water and just putting that fire out. It's a problem that will be here for generations if they leave it there. The problem will just get bigger. The cheapest time to do anything is now. The most expensive time to do something is in the future. So let's do it.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.